Blog Talk Radio.
I mean, we can, you know, we can
talk around and what have you. I think Sister Lorraine is still working. I don't know where Sister Clara is at and the other people. I think Sister Hazel, I think she is in the hospital. I'm trying to find out details of what that is about.
Oh, my goodness.
Anybody else. But I had, you know, I had a real good productive meeting today with the lady from the USDA and found out what we need to do. Got the specifics, you know, on the program and what we need to do. Because it's probably be best if I do it as an individual rather than trying to do it as a business. But then create positions for each one of you. But then you have to be trained. You have to be trained in those positions because the USDA will kind of check you out.
Yeah.
To make sure you know what you're talking about.
Right.
That kind of thing. But you know, it's all kind of the course. And I think I'm starting to find the information, understanding now what they're actually looking for. And it's, you know, it's like what I said, but I didn't know how we could actually qualify for it.
Right.
But I found out that, you know, it's just, it's really doing exactly what we said, promoting the NCRS programs.
Uh-huh.
You know, so find out what those programs are and then, you know, letting people of color, you know what those programs are and how they might serve them.
Mm-hmm.
And then if we're going to do, you know, something on the land, then, you know, submit for funding to, let's say, put in a watershed or something like that on the land.
Uh-huh.
And then they would fund it because it demonstrates some, a conservation practice. Some, oh, we need a tractor, we need this, we need that, you know, to get all that done.
Right.
And they would... they would pay for those things. So, starting with the course curriculum, we want to do that first because that would be what they're actually looking for.
Mm-hmm.
So, that is where we're going to start. I'm going to go over that stuff today. Hopefully, if we get enough people here. If not, then we'll do – well, let's see. Today is Tuesday. Thursday – well, we can do it Thursday evening because – no, tomorrow evening. So Thursday is no work day, so we couldn't do it Thursday.
No.
And
now we have peace day.
Right. But you can do – you know, the only two – only the first day – Shalom, Sister Clara. The only
Shalom.
Two – yeah, the only two feast days that are set apart would be the first day, then the heave offering, and then the last day.
Mm-hmm.
Any other days out of that, all 7 days are not non-work days, but those 3 days
right.
are. So we pick a day because we need to jump on this, start it. And I need to assign some things to different people for them to work on. But the deadline for this one is like the 27th of this month.
Right.
We're already 4 days in. So we'll see what we come up with. If it's an exercise in futility, at least we will kind of know what we're doing. She brought another program to the table. For getting the solar
uh-huh.
and wind, and it's like that's billions of dollars that they are making available to that, you know, nationwide. And so I had gone through yesterday, figuring out, going back through the business plan that we had put together the mid of last year, almost a year ago.
Right.
And redoing the numbers and stuff like that. and everything but the housing I have in here, and we have to look at a different program. I got to find a program that they will actually build the housing.
Right.
I don't know what that program is specifically yet, but he's saying that there's ways to work this where you can divert some funds to, you know, different things.
Right.
And so we would do that. But I know that we're going to need about $144,000 just for solar. And, you know, they are either giving away the money as a grant or a certain amount of it as a grant and a certain amount as a loan. And we don't have to put all that in at once. But I think what they're doing is if we put in enough, like to sell, we could actually sell back or sell energy.
Right.
So we're going to look at it. She's going to actually dig deeper into that program because she said it was just released. And so she's going to dig deeper into it. But, you know, we have enough land where we could put in a solar farm.
Right.
I think we only need maybe 10 acres to do that. And then off of that, we could meet our own needs and then sell, also sell. So, and I think there's some type of bio, whatever, I forget the terminology to use, but we could also sell back some to different companies, and then in the local area there. So I'm waiting for her to give me the particulars.
So they don't have a grant for, like, land development?
They do, but they won't break land. So we have to write this in a way, like, I went up there and I did some different things. So really, just to be honest, it is like I have to take a trip up there and take some and buy some water,
uh-huh,
and just sort of go pour it in a field to say that we've been doing some irrigation.
Right.
Even though, you know, they you know, technically we wouldn't have been fully doing irrigation, but in order to qualify for their programs, that would count. It's things,
okay,
that we don't know. You know, we're reading think that we got to put in a full, have been doing, or put in a full-blown system, but we don't have to. We just have to show that we've been making an attempt. So those types of things. There's a pipe running across the land, and there's water on the land that, as I said, like a pond, that there's like sawgrass, and so we could say we were doing whatever with that. But it's all in the way it's written, and what we're really going at after right now is we can create a program and create positions, and I can, you know, pay people to do certain jobs, and so we do that, and then redirect the money back into the farm, so that, you know, we're different things that we can do, and I'm not 100% not 100% on everything that we can do. We had the first meeting today. I understand how we can get some of this money by through education. That's what we're going to do first, is work on that. And then as far as land development, like I said, I'll go over some of my ideals that I have based upon what I've read. And she, you know, agrees that they would, they're doable through this program. So it's all in how we write it. So let's say that I want to put in some of these tunnels that they grow crops in. then I can, you know, request those and say, you know, we need 3 tunnels of this size to grow microgreens in. And then I have to explain how that's going to, you know, help the farm, you know, how it's going to help us to make more money and that kind of stuff. And they will do that. And then tractors, you know, for working the land. And there's different ways to get the equipment. The housing is the part where I don't have a lot of information yet. I got it for everything but that. So either, as I said, I would use my GI Bill.
Uh-huh.
And we would go in for a loan for the housing. Anything that I can get free in a grant, then that's what we want to do. And if I can get them to pay off the land with a grant, then I will do that as well, because then I can redirect those. Right now, this is the program that's available. This one and the energy program. And so this is just sitting down and identifying their programs. And then, you know, I will assign some to each of us. You know, you find out the who, what, when, where, and how. Answer those questions about that program, and then we just develop a curriculum that when we are going out, or me or whoever is going out to educate people on this, that'll be what we use as curriculum. You know, and as a syllabus, this is what we're going to...
Okay, so what will we be educating them on? Agriculture?
Agriculture, but the NRCS does a lot of different... They have, from what I can see, they got about 30 different programs.
Uh-huh.
And I got a list. I might as well go over them, not each one of them, but, you know, just to list them off. And what they want is for us to promote their programs.
Oh, okay.
You know, so to disadvantage people. And one of the things, there's not a lot of black farmers in Arizona. There are some, but they're not a lot. And there's no, like, HBCUs, historically black colleges for agriculture or any historically black colleges in Arizona, period. Okay, so I'm looking at saying, okay, if there is no such thing like that here, what community could we actually engage with? And so with ourselves, we can do this stuff for us and get, you know, funding for it. So I just have to set the organization up that way and then, you know, assign each one of you a position or a title, what have you, and I would be teaching you guys this initially. And then we would turn around and go and teach other disadvantaged, disenfranchised people. But I'm looking at the Hebrew communities here as potential clients for this training. So just so that we can get an audience. And say that this is what we're going to do. If I put in what they call a berm on the land, which is it catches water, so that, you know, the natural slope of the land, when it rains, the water flows a certain way. And the thing is, you're trying to keep as much of that water on the land as possible. Then you would do, you know, construct the land in such a way that it would capture that water. So we put one of those on the land. We would need one anyway. But we put one of those on the land, and then or someplace on one of the two lands that we have, and then invite, you know, say we're going to have an opening or a viewing or a training on this is how you do that. And they would pay us for offering that service. So if we take part of the land and put some of these conservation measures in, and what I'm going to do is do it as part of our farm, you know, land conservation, water conservation, solar energy, water management. Those are all programs. All programs that we would need to do ourselves anyway and be, you know, informed about them, how to do them, so that we are, you know, keeping the water on the land. We are keeping the soil from being washed away by flood. We are promoting clean energy. We are promoting clean water. It's sustainability is what they call it.
Right.
And then also nature habitat. Because we got wildlife up there, then we would want to do things in such a way that we would still reserve or help to reserve and protect some wildlife, like say on the borders of the land, say 30 or 40 feet in. We can leave it wild and help promote, you know, wildlife in those areas, wildlife habitat. Then that's what they're looking for. Because, you know, as we go and move out everywhere, we are moving, what, the animals out as well?
Yeah.
And so sustainability and conservation is about preserving some of that habitat for them as well. And you know, and I'm good with that because let's say 60 feet, 30 feet all the way around, we leave it sort of kind of wild, sort of, you know, birds and other animals and everything could have a place to live in there. Then that just creates a border around the property for us. So I would, you know, want to leave those trees and things like that in and promote other, you know, other shrubs like that that would help wildlife to thrive in there. And it's just a border for us, so that again, what we're doing is not really visible to the outside world. So it all works together. And all that we would be doing is, and you know, I don't mind helping other Hebrew groups educate them in that way. That, hey, you can buy land and do the same thing, and this is how you would do it, and yada, yada, yada. Okay, so we would teach them about these different programs that the USDA has that they want to give the money away. But, you know, the young lady that's helping me, she's familiar with all the nomenclature and the wording and all that kind of stuff, things that they don't say on their website. Things that they don't say within the grant document itself.
Right.
So she's going to help me not so much write it, but put it in the language that they want to hear it in. You know, use the words that they, you know, their buzzwords and things like that. So it's about us, you know, us sitting down and saying, okay, we need to go back over really, really quick our plan, community design, and what we have, what our end goal is to be a self-sustaining community where we have, you know, where we have the housing, we have the food growth and all that kind of stuff, the energy and all that on the land, and we are self-sustained. We will put that into writing, but then we, for this right here, for these grants, we need to write it in such a way that we are trying to help local communities.
Okay.
And then after 3 years, I think the program runs for 3 years. After 3 years, we can do what we want with it. You know, if we don't want to do that anymore, you know, it's a grant, so all of that, it was just given to us. So, and shalom, Sister Lorraine. So that is what we're looking at. So what I wanted to do tonight, we give Sister Denise time, give her a little bit more time, see if she can get here. We'll wait about another 10 minutes. But, you know, just what I've been doing, we had a budget where we, you know, we priced out the houses that we were going to do, the shipping containers and the dome. I actually called them yesterday and, you know, I got the owner of the company and he's saying, you know, the pricing on their website, but kind of way that, you know, we want to do it. And so once we start on that road to what type of house, whether we're going to do 20-foot shipping containers or whether we're going to do 40, because, you know, people with kids, I think we're going to need to either do a 40 or 220 to create, you know, the living quarters plus, you know, the bedrooms. For that, then we can, you know, they have those options. As a matter of fact, in the 40-foot dome that we were looking at, there's enough room to stack two shipping containers on top of each other.
Uh-huh.
And so downstairs could be a bedroom, you know, kitchen, bathroom, living room, and even a second bedroom. And then up, you can make like a little, another bathroom, another two or three bedrooms, depending upon how we laid it out. And so we could stack them that way, you know, for people, married couples with children, single mothers with children, single fathers with children if they're, you know, if they come. And then we have the single, you know, quarters where people don't have children. Those layouts. And so they can customize that for us, and those will be, you know, they'll be pre-built as far as customization, and then they're just delivered to wherever we want them at. We wouldn't have to do the customization. And before, I was going to have where we would just buy the shipping containers and do the customization for ourselves. And we still may do that if we get enough men. It's not, you know, it's too much work for one man to do. And even too much work for one man and three or four women because some of that stuff is super heavy.
Yeah.
You cut out a steel panel, that sucker ain't light. Shalom, Brother Gary. So, you know, it's looking at that type of stuff. And so over the next, Shalom. All right. I think over the next week as a group, once we get past the heave offering, that we do a meeting, and we need to, as I said, work on this curriculum, then I will say, okay, here are the programs. And I, you know, I need to see what programs would be specific to Arizona. And maybe those are the only ones that we need to actually promote. This is where we're at.
Uh-huh.
And then I need to, you know, since there are traditionally no black farmers here, you know, there's a couple, and most of them are not Hebrew. They are of African descent. The ones that, you know, turned me on to this program, they are from Africa. They know more about our programs than we do.
And so they get them quicker than we can.
Well, we're not applying. That's the problem.
Yeah.
That's what the young lady told me today. You know, we're just not, you know, our people, as far as this goes, a lot of them are not interested in it. So when they're doing it like in the different areas where they're doing it at, then what I'm going to do is, you know, reach out to I think there's one Hebrew, I think IOG is here. I think there's a couple of other Hebrew communities here that are not IOG. I am going to approach them as far as this goes and not doing it with us as far as joining our community, but educating them on, you know, getting the land and the different programs that the USDA has.
Uh-huh.
And educating them on that, and they, you know, they would more or less be our clients that way. So we hold, you know, seminars, we do little classes, yada, yada, yada. We just need to, I want to write this as a full-blown program so that we can try to claim as much of the money as possible. So if I said that, you know, you were going to be teaching whatever, then we create the position for that, then train in that, and then when the USDA, they would actually call you and see, you know, what you know about if it was you. And so they'd be asking different questions, and we're really training on what we're doing, okay? That's what this would be about. We're training on what we're doing without saying that it's actually, you know, getting into specifics about the community. Okay, we just wouldn't get into specifics about the community. So let me give her 2 or 3 more minutes, see if she can get home. If not, we'll go ahead and start with this. I do want to ask everybody to pray for Sister Hazel. She is in the hospital with a blood clot. I think it's blood clot. And so we want to pray that Yah brings her through this and clears her of those blood clots. I think curriculum-wise and course-wise, it's not going to be that hard to do because I found the programs, and she's going to actually send me a list. But I found them, you know, on the internet doing a search, searching the right way. That's what they want, promote NCRS programs through education or demonstration of conservation practices. So when we look at these different, what we need to do is plan out our community completely. So we know we're going to need housing. We're going to need land to farm with. We're going to need to store water on the land. We're going to need to make sure that when it storms that we have proper drainage, and that we can divert the water to where we want it to go. We're going to need fencing. So all these things, and then we say, okay, in that design, we also want to create some create some animal habitat. So let's say we put a pond in. Pond, you know, and we can fix the pond up however we want so that, you know, it's someplace for us to go and sit around or whatever. So it has, you know, it can attract wildlife, it can attract birds, like, you know, geese or ducks and things like that. Not that we're going to be eating them, but as a natural habitat for them. So we take 2 or 3 acres.
But if the pond is deep enough, Brother Miles, can we put fish in it?
Yeah, we can do that too. Lorraine?
No, that was my granddaughter.
Okay. So, yeah, we can put fish in it. We can, you know, we can design it however we want. It's really to retain water on the property. And then also, if we do it a certain way, then either we're going to retain the water by putting in some type of barrier that keeps the water from leaking out, or let's say that we, let's do this and I'll get back into this. Let us go ahead and do our statement of faith, pray in, and then I make a motion that we bring this meeting to order. Do I have a second?
I second.
I'll second.
Okay, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? The ayes have it. Our statement of faith. So we'll go ahead and get started and ask people to come. If they're able to come, then we will continue, and I'll try to update them on this. But this portion of it, we're going to have to get done as soon as possible. So we are in the feast days, and we're going to honor the feast days. We're not going to be doing anything we ought not be doing on the days we ought not be doing it. I believe that all scripture is given by the inspiration of Elohim and is profitable for doctrine, for reproof, and for correction, for instructing. I believe that all holy men must be inspired and directed by the Spirit of Yah, according to 2 Peter chapter 1, verses 20 through 21. I believe there is one Elohim according to Deuteronomy chapter 6 and verse 4. I believe that Yeshua is the manifest Son of Yah according to Luke chapter 1, verse 35. I believe I'm a new covenant child of Yah according to Hebrews chapter 8 and verse 10. I believe I'm of the royal priesthood according to 1 Peter chapter 2 and verse 9. I believe I am chosen and directed by Yah according to Ephesians chapter 1 and verse 4. I believe I'm a child of Yah and of the seed of Abraham according to Galatians chapter 3, verses 26 through 29. I can do all things through Mashiach, which strengthens me, according to Philippians chapter 4 and verse 13. Let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. It is my whole duty to fear Yah and keep his commandments, according to Ecclesiastes chapter 12 and verse 13. Let us give the Most High a hand clap of praise. Hallelujah. Thank you, Father. We just glorify you on today, and we lift you up and we magnify your name. We extol thee, O Yah Elohim. We extol thee, Father. And we lift you up and we bow down to you on today, Father. And we just ask that you would be with us in this meeting. Hallelujah. 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 Thank you, Father. Thank you, Yah Elohim. Thank you for all that you do and all that you're going to do. Hallelujah. And Father, I ask that you would rebuke any spirit that will come against what we're doing, that you would bind them even now in your still homicidic precious name. Amen and amen.
Amen.
All right. Holy hands praise to the Most High. Our Father, which art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread and forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us. Lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom and the power and the glory, now and forever. Amen and amen. All right. In order. And, all right, if you have background noise on your end, if you'll mute yourself. And then.
Yeah, I have to do it for the matter.
Okay. All right. All right. So we are going to start this. I'm going to bring up this document and show you what I learned today and what the USDA for this particular program is, what they're really asking. And before I said I didn't think we could do it, but we can use ourselves as the recipient of this. She said not to do it as the business entity because then we add in, there's other checks that are added, but if we do this as, you know, I as the individual, and then I can assign different individuals as part of the organization to different portions, whatever we have to do so that we can apply and qualify with them. So the vast majority of this, from a standpoint of the course, let me just bring this up. And for those of you who are on the phone, you can just listen, take notes if you're, you know, going to be participating and those types of things. Okay, so let me share my screen. Show you what, let me look at this too. Where's the pop-up at? Got all kind of screens open. And I'll tell you about something else that I have going on. Okay, so I'm going to share my screen and how you doing?
How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. Had a very good day, had a very good meeting with this young lady, and she is, you know, out to want to help us achieve what we're trying to do. She believes in the community. I think she herself is Muslim in her beliefs, but, you know, she's about us black people getting, you know, what we can get out of the system. You know, I really do thank God for her because she's a sweet woman, personality, and she was, you know, really down for helping us achieve what it is that we want to achieve. So, can you guys see my screen?
I can see it.
Okay. Sister Denise, Sister Mary?
I'm putting glasses on.
Oh, well, that helped. No matter what's in front of you right now without them.
Right.
I see white.
Yes, Brother Miles, I can see it.
All right, amen. All right, so.
Yeah, I got it.
these are, we see through this NFO, this national funding objective, eligible applicants may propose projects that engage historically underserved producers. Historically underserved producers, they define in here, and, you know, blacks being amongst those, okay? And underserved communities equitably, because what they traditionally, we have been excluded from these programs, okay? And so white farmers have used these programs, like, you know, how she explained to me, white farmers have used these programs like we used to use food stamps. Okay, they, you know, they used it to help them build wealth, whereas we were using food stamps, what, to help us survive? They were using these to help them build wealth. And, you know, since the, who's that, James Floyd, what is the name, Floyd incident?
Floyd.
Yeah, I can't remember his first name.
George.
Yeah, George Floyd. You know, they have tried to, they have been coming out with programs where they're saying that they are going to help our people more or less get access to these programs that we haven't traditionally had access to. And so that's what that underserved producers and underserved communities is all about, whether it's Indians or whether it's blacks or whether it's women. Okay. And so this program, though, what the national resource is about, reserving national resources, you know, natural resources. So the land, the air, the water, wildlife. Preserving those things, and if you got a farm, you know, how do you incorporate those conservation measures to do those things, okay? So they have money that the government gives out to help do those things, and this portion is to educate as well. Now, so I'm going to read these, and then I'm going to go down through this because this is what we have to focus on, and we really have to do it. Like I said, the most of this rest of this week is kind of dead, except for, yeah, probably kind of dead. It means that it's not available to us to do this because of the feast days. So early next week, Monday, you know, we need
Is now in the conference.
So that we can get this
done.
And have a chance. And let me see who
just signed in.
And as I said,
we can create
positions
for ourselves.
And get paid.
So let me mute you, Gracia.
Don't get this echo on the thing. Still be heard, right?
Yes.
Okay. So through this NFO, eligible applicants may propose projects that engage historically underserved producers and underserved communities equitably and offer access to opportunities through outreach activities that promote NRCS programs through education. I think that's the easiest aspect of this to do. So as a service, we as a group offer this service to underserved communities. And right now we are one of those, underserved communities? And so we can actually develop this and offer it to ourselves. And then at the same time, as I said, I was going to reach out to the other Hebrew communities in the area and try to get them interested in or just educate them on what's available to them, okay? Not necessarily as join up because they got their own they have their own doctrines and things like that, that they, in ways that they believe in, that I don't believe in everything that they believe, the way they believe it. But, you know, they got some things that they're doing that, no, But, you know, as far as telling them what's out there and promoting it to them as a service, and the government will pay us to do that, then that's what we want to do. Okay. And then when it comes to the land, because we're going to be, you know, putting in the crops and, you know, growing for ourselves to be self-sufficient. The microgreen business, I'll show you guys this in a second, had a guy, you know, one of my customers that comes every Friday, gave me a call and said, hey, we got a market up here that is just phenomenal. And, you know, this is a couple, but they will buy your microgreens from you, and they just sell them up here. But they have, you know, a huge market. And so as part of, you know, the business growing and having a customer that, you know, I can say, okay, I can, whatever I think the way it's working out is, however much I can grow and sell to them, they would just buy it. They market up whatever they want to market up. And so that's a reliable and sustainable customer, and I can probably do large volumes with them. Because they do, they, you know, everything that they take to market, as far as they have many people that come, they sell completely out. And so I think that that will be a good deal. And it's only about, probably about an hour and 10 minutes from here. So even when we are up on the land, we can still bring stuff down to the valley to sell, but, you know, also sell in the low cities around the land that are within 40 or 50 miles, freeway that's only an hour, it's doable. So looking at all of this, because as part of this, I'm going to incorporate the microgreen business and say, okay, I need trucks that can haul microgreen, you know, that are live, that are not packaged, that are still, you know, in the trays. And so that they don't get wind blown, so the trucks have to be enclosed, so that, you know, I can put them in there, that the wind doesn't blow them and knock them down and that kind of stuff, and sell them live at markets, because that's what draws people. If I have plants sitting on the table, you know, like, what was it, Sunday, this past Sunday when I went, had a phenomenal day. I mean, just stay busy all day long, and people coming to buy, and they're buying 3, 4, and 5 at a time, different packs of microgreens, and buying whole trays. You know, and they're like, is that the last for you? I said, yeah, but you know what? First come, first serve. You want the whole tray? I'll sell you the whole tray. Type of deal. And so, and they appreciate it because, you know, you go to most farmers markets today, you might have a farmer there selling some crops, and then everything else is junk food. You know, stuff people making, and it's good, but it's not good for you. And so a lot more people, especially the older we get, the better they're trying to eat. And so, you know, they're coming up and just thanking me for, you know, selling microgreens and bringing it to that market. And people who have never heard about microgreens and those types of things, you know, they're buying and, you know, becoming regular customers. So the business is growing, and, you know, they're going out. I have customers standing there selling for me. They're selling. You know, I don't even get a chance to say anything. They're calling people from, you know, walking by, hey, you need to come check these out, yada, yada, yada. So it's a good thing, and we can actually – use that as part of this, as part of the growth. And so anything that we need to expand that business, whether it's trucks or whether it's the high tunnel to grow in, and then trucks to make delivery, tractors and all this kind of stuff. Now, we don't really need tractors for microgreens, but we will need tractors for and backhoes for you know, working the land. And so they'll buy all that. And I have, you know, all that stuff documented, at least what we, you know, like the caterpillar or, you know, leveling the land and creating roads and that kind of stuff. Then the tractor with this attachment you know, different, all the equipment. I have it documented and went through, spent yesterday going through and updating the spreadsheet and, you know, refiguring out, like, for each house, the appliances that we were going to allow. So everybody will have, you know, that stove, I think we, the microwave, the coffee maker, you know, the lighting, the refrigerator, the AC, you know, the heating and AC, all that stuff that we're putting in that requires electricity. And then I allow for, you know, like stereos and computers and Walkman, because all of that load we have to be able to handle. And if we're not able to handle it, then we will have a lot of power outages. So I, you know, sat down yesterday and got the requirements for what it takes to run a certain size appliance, like, you know, certain size stove, a certain size TV, microwave, refrigerator, the whole nine yards, and the AC, and, you know, what their max load is. Because when you turn on something, especially if you've got a motor, it takes more electricity when you first turn it on. And then once it really starts running, then it comes down to what is like an operation speed. So did that, and then, you know, said, okay, we're gonna allow these appliances, yada, 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 and this will be in every house. You know, no house will be different. So for, you know, people can bring their own computer and that kind of stuff. But as far as the appliances that we are providing as standard being in all of those, you know, the light, the stove, the oven, the heat, the AC, all the stuff that we're going to provide as standard equipment, because we all have all things in common, we all have all things equally, then I had to know what that load was going to be. And I had to know, if everybody, let's say in the morning, everybody usually gets up and they got a routine, but, you know, everybody's going to get up and brush their teeth. If it's cold, they're going to turn on the heat or turn it up or, you know, those types of things. Then I had to account for what the maximum load on the system is going to be. Because it's not like when you're on the grid, things that we take for granted, you know, we just get up and turn on lights. We get up and if we want coffee, we plug in the coffee maker. If we want hot water, you know, so forth and so on, we take those things for granted that they're just going to work. But when you're providing your own electricity, then, you know, there's some things that the cities and the states do and the electric companies, those utility providers do, that, you know, they're going to provide a constant rate of electricity. So when you turn on something, you know, it's not going to blow a fuse unless you got too much plugged into your own house. Then you can blow a fuse. Or triple fuse. So I have to account for all that. So I did that yesterday and said, okay, this is the size system that I want to, you know, that we're going to need for each house. And the community initially planned out for 10 houses, one pod, okay? 10 houses or 10 domes with the home in it. So I sized the system for that. And that's roughly the electricity is going to be by itself. As far as solar would be about 144,000. Okay, 12 kilowatt system for each house. You can have AC. You can anything that you want to turn on, it'll work. It's not going to, you know, you're going to turn something on and everybody's going to be without electricity. So I sized the system that way and the batteries and everything, and have that available because we can ask for funding for that, okay? And so she brought a program today where they will pay for, you know, as a grant or a grant and a loan, that they would pay for that, putting it in. Now, if we include part of that in this program for conservation and, you know, then even windmills, because there's I think the average wind speed up there is about 6 or 7 miles per hour on a daily basis, you know, depending upon the time of the year. I have two windmills already. I wasn't going to use them that way, not with the wind, because I think I can get a constant, with electricity, you want a constant speed, like with sunlight. You want to get as much sunlight as you can, but everything is being stored in batteries in any way. But, you know, you want to recharge and all that kind of stuff in a constant manner. So I priced all the stuff out so that we know how much money we're going to be asking for. I priced out the dome, starting with the 39-footers, with the 20-foot shipping containers, which we've already got that will do, starting with one bedroom, a living room, you know, bathroom, kitchen, that set up, or two bedrooms. And then I priced out if we were going to do three or four bedrooms, whether we had to stack shipping containers and, you know, provide stairs to the upstairs or the secondary, you know, second, third, and fourth bedrooms, however we would need to customize it for a particular family. So we would look at that and, you know, as a group, we'll lay it out again. You know, so the yard is already self-contained. So I priced those out and said, okay, this is what these cost. This is what these cost. If we do a 50-50 or a 70-30, you know, depends upon how we are structured at the time that we actually start doing this. If we have to do more family homes than we do single, then that's what we have to do. Or if we have to do more singles starting off than family, that's what we have to do. But I priced all that out so that when we start going for funding for that or we start going for loans, we know what amount of money we're talking about doing. So in this, these NRCS programs, through education is probably one of the easier things to do. We just come up with the program. So let's see if I got this over here. I'll drag it over. Yeah. So I'm going to move this over to the screen. Let me know if you're able to see it. And we'll come back to this document. I want it right here. Anybody see a blue screen with white writing on it?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So these are their programs and their initiatives. And these are the different programs that, you know, they want us to educate people on, okay? So we are, what we're, one thing we would do is list these programs and then come up with a training course. And it doesn't have to be in real detail. It's making sure that we understand what programs are available, you know, to the community. Evidently not.
No, I didn't. Say it again.
Okay. Only thing we do is all these programs that they have for land conservation or water conservation, air quality and all that.
Mm-hmm.
I got a list of the programs right here. We would go through and we would just come up. Like I would say, okay, Sister Lorraine, I want you to do a who, when, where, what, and how for this program. So she would go in and basically break down the program. It's the Environmental Quality Incentive Program. Who is responsible for it or who is the main contact point in the USDA or NRCS? When is it available and what the program covers? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And so we're just going out and educating our communities on this is a program that's available to you to use, and this is what it can do for you. That's what the education would be about. Okay, so a lot of these programs we would need for our what, self? Because we do have land. We are, going to be farming it. We need to understand, water retention. We need to understand land conservation, we need to understand water conservation, we need to understand the wildlife habitats that are on the land. And so if we plow up some land, then we're going to be destroying some animals' homes.
Right.
And so how do we, if we reserve a part of the land and leave that habitat there or recreate it, that's part of conservation. We're conserving that animal's what, home. Okay. So they want, you know, understanding that we all live on this planet, and whereas they didn't really care what they destroyed in the past, now they want to make these systems operate together so that we can coexist with them in these environments, the animals, and we're not polluting the land, and so forth and so on. Does it make sense?
Yeah.
That's what this is all about. So land management, you know, water conservation, all these different programs. And so let's say we don't have the type of trees that we have. See this picture right here where it says Healthy Forest Reserve Program?
Mm-hmm.
And you see these trees in here?
Yeah.
We don't have those types of trees on the land. And they may not even grow on the land because of the type of soil. But if there was a way that we can incorporate these type of trees, like as a windbreak or something, then we would say, okay, as a windbreak, that's going to help, you know, the winds come out of this, out of the north, and they're at 50 miles an hour, and they're picking up dirt. They're picking up the dirt and blowing it away. So that's what land erosion. And so if we put these trees in here, then the trees cut down on the wind, which what, cuts down on the land erosion?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and so then they would pay, you know, us to actually put the trees on and do that kind of stuff. And whatever equipment that we needed to do it, you know, they would buy it for us. Okay, make sense?
Yeah.
So when it comes to growing crops, if what we're, where we are putting the crops at, if we need, whatever we need to do to the land to make the crops grow and to, you know, enrich the soil and yada, 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 then we include that as part of the program for our own land. Okay. And then we are asking for those resources, but we're also going to train other people what? Why we do that and how to do it. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So we're going to, you know, we're going to sit down and say, okay, how do we really want this land to look? Like I do want, you know, as part of the initial build, I said we would have a pond, a water retention pond.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And I, you know, there's one on the land, but it's a natural retention, but we can actually build it up and make it a little bit bigger and a little bit deeper. We could put fish in it. We could do whatever we wanted to. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then they would pay for that because it's part of water retention. So if the water flows a certain way, and when it, you know, when you get big storms usually create what, flash floods?
Mm-hmm.
And so you would want to capture as much of that water, or if it's a rainy season, you want to capture as much of that water and keep it on the land and what, reuse it. You know, either to water crops or to... you know, help other vegetation grow or provide habitat for, let's say, migrating geese
mm-hmm.
or ducks, you know, anything, yeah. any part of nature, or, you know, there's wildlife up there. So they do have, you know, some wild wildlife. Like they got bears, they got cougars, things like that. We just have to be aware of it and always what? Be aware of it, that those animals are in the area. But we'd also want to make it a habitat where some of those types of animals could live, but they're not going to be living around our living quarters, if that makes sense. Because if you're going to destroy the land, they want to make sure that you're doing something to not just destroy the land, but also keep some of those habitats in place. And I know y'all ain't excited about that, but it is what it is. Keep your gun on you. All right. So any questions on that? Yes? No? Maybe no?
No, I don't have any.
No questions.
Okay. So We are out in the wilderness now. When I was up there before, I did not see not one wild animal. I think I saw a hawk. Okay, the two times that I've been up there. But that didn't mean that those animals like elk and deer, those wild animals aren't there. We just didn't see them. But I know that they're in that area. So it's part we can put in certain types of fencing. Let's say that we leave 60 feet from the boundary of the land going in. We take 60 feet and we leave that wild all the way around. Mm-hmm. That leaves what, make a habitat in?
Mm-hmm.
But then we can actually put up fencing, let's say at 60 feet, put that all around the land. That is, you know, sort of discourages them from coming into the land. That don't necessarily mean that it will stop them, but it discourages them, okay,
right,
from coming in. So we can do that. And, you know, when we're talking about 200 acres, 60 feet is not. Yeah, 60 feet is not. We can give that up and, you know, just say, okay, that's reserved for wildlife. If we put a pond in the middle where I think we're going to put a pond at, then we make it big enough, that it attracts. If we take 2 or 3 acres, 2 or 3 acres is a lot of water. And if we make it big enough, then, flying fowls that are migrating, birds of prey, hawks and stuff like that, it'll become a habitat for them. But that's not necessarily a bad thing. I mean, if you got a flock of ducks swimming around in your pond, then that's good for the children as far as wildlife goes. We've got to also always remember that there could be some other wildlife there as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but it, you know, we can set it up, and I was looking at videos on this yesterday as far as setting up, you know, water retention areas, what the purposes is of ponds, you know, natural ponds or man-made ponds, and why you would build them. Like, let's say that we're going to need a septic system, and we need to clean the water. You know, most of the time on a septic system, the water, the septic tank holds the hard heavy materials, and then the lighter materials sort of float over the top, like the water, and then they go into pipes, and then that spread out over a certain amount of land, and it seeps into the land, okay? And through that seepage, it cleans the water, okay? So I was looking at systems where, let's say if we came off the septic system and then we ran a pipe, we didn't let that water just seep into what's called gray water, didn't let it just seep into the ground, but we ran it into a pond, not for us to be drinking out or to be using, but to plant certain types of plants in,
right,
like water plants and things like that, they will filter the water and clean it, those plants. And so the thing is to get the water to go through their root system, they will actually clean the water. And then if it comes out of that system, then it's actually usable again, okay, for, you know, watering plants or that kind of stuff. So it's just a way to reclaim the water and reuse it. So we can say, okay, we can call it, I can show you some that are on, that I found on video, that they're just beautiful. You would never know that it was for that purpose. You would think it was just decorative. But it's really being used to clean the water. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So, you know, we can incorporate those things, and because we're incorporating it into the community, then they will actually pay to do that. They will pay for it as part of the conservation. Find it and then include it and then ask for the money for it. Okay. So these are the programs that we're going to be looking at. And then I'm going to find out, because there are going to be all these programs are not going to be specific to Arizona. And what we want to do is look at the programs that are specific to Arizona. And then, you know, become familiar with those and create the course out of that. Okay. But then if we were, if we did some type of video course, because it doesn't say how you have to deliver this. They got online class, right?
Yeah.
So we can actually do a video course or video curriculum. Then we could actually, no matter where they're at, if we provide the service, then we can get paid for providing that service to that audience. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does.
Okay. So looking at this, we would just, on each one of these programs, starting off, we would just get to who, what, when, where, and how. You know, the five questions you always ask about something. We don't have to be real detailed. You know, this is a program that is available to you if you are trying to do this or you're trying to do that. So, you know, we'll get the particulars and what the program would, you know, specifically be used for. And then if it is to our need, then we also apply to have that done on the land. So here's one of the ideals that I had. And I have to see if we qualify for this because this is the educator in me coming out. I wanted to, since they're talking about, well, let's go back to this document. And we're going to look at these programs. I first wanted to have a list of them so we know what programs are available because this is what they want us to promote their programs. Let our people know this is what is available through the USDA, okay, for you. And then develop community conservation partnerships that encourage historically underserved producers to plan and protect farmland ecosystems. So we are doing farmland? Then we also need to know, and we can apply for this stuff, how to protect the ecosystem, you know, the soil, the water, the natural resources that are around the farm. So they would pay us for that. We could be using the same funds or get paid to teach ourselves, but also get paid to what, teach others?
Right.
The watershed, the wildlife habitat, and geographical areas of underserved communities. So we just say, okay, we need to understand how to protect the farmland ecosystems. We need to understand how to protect the watershed in our area. We need to understand how do we protect the wildlife habitat around the area. That's how we would use that. Does that make sense? So I say, okay, I'm doing this, and this person's doing that, and this person's doing this, and this person's doing this. We come up with a program. We say how many hours we're going to do it, and then we base salaries off of that. Okay, so they give us the money, and then X amount of it would be dedicated to what, salaries? Well, we're paying ourselves to do this. Make sense to anybody?
Yes, it does.
Okay. And then informed small-scale or urban agricultural or urban we're small-scale producers right now, okay? We don't have one of those big commercial farms. So we would be considered small-scale. But somebody, just like I'm doing right now, growing microgreens out of my sunroom, educating them on how to do that. Inform small-scale urban agriculture producers about participation in the conservation program. Now, everybody's not doing it out of a sunroom. They may not have that. They may only have their backyard or their patio. But how do they do that? Because they want to inform people how to, and they will give them money to do that. But they'll pay us to actually educate them. So we're not trying to keep all the knowledge to ourselves. Right. And they can apply for grants to, you know, get so much money to grow their own crops in their backyard or whatever. So we teach them that. Support education on and planning for an adoption of conservation practice. She wouldn't really, she didn't really know or didn't have a document for what they consider as climate smart. But when she gets that, the only thing we would do is say, okay, depending upon what climate you're in, then you can do what, these things? So whether it's planting, you know, if they got a bad erosion problem, one of the things that keeps soil from being eroded by water is plants. So, oh, you need to plant some grass and some flowers, like in a wild field. So just plant this, you know, and the government will buy the seed and it'll stop your land erosion problem. So it's not really that hard. It's just a matter of educating ourselves. And then, you know, even at the farmer's market, if we're saying we're going to do this at every farmer's market, that qualifies because we're still educating people. So as part of, you know, when people come up to buy microgreens, or I can say, hey, are you familiar with this, that you can do this at your home, grow the microgreens, but it could be, you know, any type of crop that they were trying, you know, like one guy came out, he was trying to grow cucumbers and those types of things. Okay, well, you can do this and get paid for telling them how to do that.
Yeah,
okay. Okay. So that's what this last one is about. You know, and then nutrition. Like I already am, you know, teaching people about the benefits of microgreens and why they should be doing them. I'm not necessarily showing them how to grow them. Even though, if they say they want to sprout, then I'll tell you, if you just want to sprout, get you a jar and do this. Because, it's easy enough to find out if you really want to find out. And so just telling them, if we can get paid for just telling them, why not? Okay. And I think we probably just have to keep track of the numbers that are coming through, the number of people we're talking to. So we're at the farmer's market and we talk to 75 people, or we talk to 100 people. Then they will pay us for that outreach, that educating. Okay. So applicants are encouraged to showcase the local environment and economic value of adopting conservation measures through various methods, training, and demonstration. Again, the local environment here is desert. Up north, it's going to be semi-desert, semi-arid. So how do you do this in those climates? Because that's local. And then the economic value of doing it, you're preserving wildlife, the watershed, and the reason why I'm pushing for the atmospheric water generator is because the watersheds everywhere are becoming low and they're becoming polluted. I don't care how deep they are. You know, the watersheds over L.A. and Houston and all these big cities, the water up underneath them is not worth drinking because, you know, people spilling gas and pesticides and, poisons and everything that we do that we don't really pay attention to where it's going. We just think it just disappears, you know. No, it goes into the ground. It seeps through the ground. And if it's heavy enough or it's enough, it ends up in the water table. And then if you're pumping water from the water table, then you're pumping back up all that stuff. Now, supposedly, the deeper it goes, the cleaner it gets. But they know that a lot of that, those pollutants survive and make it into the water table. So we would be educating people on hey, you know, when you are changing your car oil, you know, if you do it at home, you don't want to pour it down the gutter. Why? Because it's going to end up in the water table. And then we got to have, you know, the government's got to do what? Got to clean the water before it comes to your house.
Mm-hmm.
And then they put all the fluoride in. And how many of us know that fluoride is not good for us? Fluoride and chlorine. It's not good for us. It's in our water, but we really shouldn't be drinking it. They got processes that take that stuff out of your water, have a negative effect on the body. So, you know, we're just educating them on those types of things. Eligible applicants should consider outreach that is mutually beneficial to both the community and NRCS. So NRCS has certain goals that they want to achieve, and we just want to make those community goals what meet theirs. That's the object of the education, so that if they are trying to conserve water, that the community understands that they're trying to conserve water and work within those boundaries. Do things that are going to do that, that incorporate local needs and prioritize conservative investment. Such outreach should increase awareness of NCRC's programs, services, and career opportunities. Now, that's the third leg to this, and what I was going to speak on next, because as I was dreaming last night, thinking about this stuff, and thinking about, you know, there's not a bunch of black people here to begin with. The whole state, black population is only like 4%. For the communities that are here, and even, you know, the Indian communities and stuff like that, the communities that are here for, you know, young people and young adults to make careers with the NRCS. So one of the things, and part of how I was looking at incorporating this and getting some of our housing or the glamping site funded by them, if we include it in a education program, let's say that one of the goals I've always wanted to do is to reach out to children that are at risk in the school-to-prison pipeline. They're troubled teens. And because most of them don't really have anything to do or that, you know, nothing to get involved with, if it is, it's negative, is to have a school-to-prison pipeline program that we are going to intercept those kids when they first start getting in trouble. We will say, okay, let's say when we first start off, if we do 7 tents, then we can say, okay, 1 tent or 2 tents, 2 canopies or whatever we're going to do on the glamping, we're going to bring those youth up. It's not that far. And, you know, it depends upon what age we do. If it's too young, then we would have to bring them onto the land and house them there. But we're going to bring them up and we're going to introduce to agriculture, farming, and conservation. And then see if we can create an interest in them in doing that as a occupation. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So if we let's say we take the glamping site and we dedicate so many to this program, and I'm thinking the way that it would work is whether somebody was in that particular tent or not, the fact that we're offering it, they would pay for it as though it's occupied. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So whether we are producing income from it or whether we are housing one of those teams, they would be paying for it. So we bring them up, and it, you know, it doesn't have to be a long time, 3 days, 4 days, or whatever, to introduce them to this and see if we can get them to generate an interest in wanting to do this. If they were Hebrew, or they were, you know, in if we could get to also give them a spiritual education at the same time to try to get them, you know, to come out of crime and sin and that kind of stuff, to put them, have them to have some self-worth about themselves and live by a standard. Then if they are of the right mindset, then we could also say, okay, you could also join our community as well. And it could be something that you could do full time. Anybody get the gist of what I'm saying?
Yes, I do.
What are your thoughts? It's all too quiet.
I think you're fine with it.
Okay. Thank you, Sister Denise. Anybody else? Thoughts?
Work out and
have to know that we're kind of exposing ourselves in a way that we hadn't intended. But I think for the time being, because we only have to do this if we are just doing it for it to, you know, try to get the money, 1 to 3 years, okay? And after 3 years, the program is over. Everything that they have bought for us is just ours. If it's the housing, the equipment, so forth, and if we want to continue to do it because we see a value in the service, then we can do that. And it would continue to be what a service that we provide and an income that we could generate, jobs that we could what generate. So you're living on the land, you know, this is what we do. Then you're going to train in this, and this is how much the government's going to pay us for that. It makes perfect sense to me.
Makes sense to me, too.
Okay. So that's one of the other thoughts. If it's not, you know, the school-to-prison pipeline, because we do have a lot of kids, you know, anybody ever heard of the school-to-prison pipeline?
No, I haven't.
Lorraine, looks like you were trying to say something.
Yeah, what was it?
The school-to-prison pipeline.
No, I haven't heard of that.
Okay. The school-to-prison pipeline is where our society has automatically, if you are a person of color, especially Negro, Hebrew, Israelite, by the third grade, they have already determined where they want you to go. So if you are a problem child, let's say that you have problems reading or you get in trouble in school, they have already, they actually determine today, based upon that, how many prisons they're going to need in the future, okay? And so the school-to-prison pipeline, if you got a troubled child, and they say trouble through their teens, then they project that they'll go to jail at some point, especially if you're black, okay? And they have a jail cell already waiting to accommodate that. This is part of the system. So the prison system itself in most states was designed to incarcerate us and charge us as a people with felonies so that if you go look up in state law and in the Constitution, if you get a felony, you are really relegated to third-class citizen and as a slave, and you're a slave of the state. Okay, and so in a lot of states that they would, you know, when we do a crime, they will charge us with a felon, whereas if somebody else, if it's somebody of that's a Caucasian, they might charge them with a misdemeanor. Like, let's say, okay, here's a classic example. What's the difference between cocaine and crack cocaine?
Nothing.
There ain't no difference. What race uses what?
Right.
Okay. Crack cocaine was an epidemic in the black community. And it's where they would take, you know, cocaine and mix it with something else, people would become very addicted to it, okay? And it would cause people, you know, we know what crack causes people to do. But if you got caught with crack cocaine, it was an automatic felon. So they could throw you in jail and charge you with a felony, you lose your voting rights and all this kind of stuff. And then you became free labor for who? The prison system. Okay. Now, when it now, what kind of drug epidemic do we have going around the United States now?
An opioid
addiction. That's a drug of white, and it's a drug that was addiction that was caused by the doctor.
Yeah.
Okay. Now it's a health issue. They look at those same two things, the drug addiction, but when it was black, they criminalized it. When it was white, it's a health addiction, it's a health problem. Everybody understand that? That's the way they classified those. Okay. And so if you were black and you got hung up, you know, caught up in crack cocaine and you went to prison, then you got a felony. They just used you as labor. Because a lot of the call centers you call, you get in a prison. You get an inmate in prison. They ain't all going overseas. Or if it's the corporations will go to the prisons and say, okay, we need X amount of labor to create, to do this particular process. They would be getting, they would pay the state a dollar or two an hour, you know, for these inmates labor, and that's what they would get this product for. Whereas they might have to pay you or I $8, $9, $10 an hour. Makes sense?
Yeah.
Okay, and so this was by design. And so I'll send you guys some link on the school to prison pipeline, and you'd be surprised how they grade these children and how they classify them in the school. They don't try to help every student. They don't try to teach every student. They try to teach the ones that don't have problems. So if your child is a problem, if they can't read real well, if they got to take a whole lot of energy to teach them, you sort of push them to the back of the class and then sort of pass them along. That's how we're getting these children that are graduating school and can't what, read, can't do arithmetic, but they got a diploma. Okay. Most of them end up before that time spending some time in some type of juvenile detention, those types of things. And so, and then to, you know, on to the longer lasting incarceration. And it's actually planned that way. So to stop that pipeline and to, you know, provide what I was doing before I went to Amazon, I went to the city of Phoenix, and I presented them with a proposal that I would take students that were in the, you know, in that pipeline, certain ones, and that I would teach them IT and, you know, give them and help them to get certified so that they would have a skill that was marketable and that they could use to survive and make a living in the world other than, what reverting to crime?
Right.
Okay. And when I presented it to the city of Phoenix, they had just opened their own school like that. Okay. And the lady that runs it, you know, she emails me every now and again because we talked about, you know, Hebrew Israelitism and stuff like that. And she called me out of nowhere because she was starting to, her eyes were starting to open to this stuff. And so I went ahead and went to work at Amazon because, you know, they were taking too long. They were saying they were interested, and they had just opened up their own program. And, you know, because I was actually going to take it into the prisons as well. So it was just a matter of, you know, setting up the system so that I could access the prison and the state would pay for the labs and that kind of stuff. But, you know, they're not really interested in helping prisoners. They say they are, but they're really not. So, yeah, so I have been interested in that for a while. Now, I'm not necessarily interested in bringing prisoners and that kind of stuff to the land. children, kids who are in trouble, and in this case, agriculture and conservation. We're like creating our own customer, even with the students or with you know, the people in the community, and the state will pay for that. Okay, pay us to do that. We just have to create our own program to address a particular target population. Does that make sense? So that's what the outreach is all about. Okay, we just want to make sure that they are familiar with the NCRS programs, what this is available to you. This is what kind of grants you can get. This is what's going to, you know, anything that we would get from, let's say, the FSA, which is another department of the USDA. And soon, you know, I'll start getting familiar with their stuff, but they mainly do the loans. And so USDA, NCRS does mainly grants, but I've seen some stuff out there where they say it's loans as well. But they mainly give away money, you know, on grants. So you got to sell your program. So, you know, we'll spend the time and say, okay, we want to put these features on the land. And then we're going to be conducting this farming in the microgreen. We need this equipment to do that. I can start, you know, where I've been, took the past 15 months to learn how to grow microgreens. Been growing the microgreens, selling them at the market for 6 months. We are now starting to, you know, make a headway and generate clients and generate income. This is what we need to expand that business. Okay, and then incorporate the land. Well, we want to grow more microgreens. I've been doing it out of a 50 by 14 space. And now we want some tunnels that are 100 feet long by 30 feet wide, and we want them, you know, heated and air conditioned, and they got tunnels like that, and so we want to be able to grow in the winter time and in the summer. Winter is not really a problem. Well, up there it may be, and summer may be easier because it's cooler up there, but down here in the valley, summertime, you don't do a whole lot of growing of nothing unless it's under controlled conditions. Because I put some stuff out. I grew some stuff in the house, like cucumbers and squash last year. Transferred it outside, and even though it was getting water and it was in the hydroponic tank, the heat from the sun just burnt it up. Okay, how much water it was getting? I was like, okay, that's a no-go. You know, when they say something is full sun, it's not the full Arizona sun. It's not the full desert sun. It may be the full sun in North Carolina, but there's a different type of sun here in Arizona and in Las Vegas. It's different. It's more intense. And so those plants didn't survive outside. As long as I had them growing inside, they would do well, grow fast and flower and do all that kind of stuff, but I wasn't trying to grow them inside. You know, that experiment was to see if I could make hydroponics work outside.
Mm-hmm.
And the heat, you know, I even put a screen over, but by the time I put the screen up, it was just too late. I was like, you know, I need to go ahead and move on with the microgreen stuff, and so I went ahead and concentrated on that. I know I can get, you know, cucumbers and that kind of stuff to grow hydroponically as long as I can screen it from the sun. So we can do those things and, you know, not even grow in the dirt. If we get those, like those high tunnels that I was just talking about, because
mm-hmm.
it'll screen the sun, we can control the temperature. So we could grow actually large vegetables like, you know, peppers and squash and cucumbers and tomatoes and all that kind of stuff. They don't all have to be dedicated to microgreens. So part of the farm could be included in those high tunnels. And the food that we grow for ourselves could be included in the high tunnels. And then I'm sure there's people that eat. I don't eat eggs, but I'm sure there are those of us that do. So we're going to need, what, chickens? probably some chickens, some goats, no hogs, you know, those, and if, you know, a cow or two here or there, we can have space for all of that, and we can, they will either buy it for us or we buy it ourselves, you know, as we get there and start having to do this stuff. So even the building of the barn, they will do, you know, for equipment and for animals. So this is what we're looking at. And so we just have to put it on paper. This is what we're going to do. As I said, the only part that I don't know, I can justify some of it, part of the program. I can't justify it all. It's the housing yet, until we find some other programs that they will actually do that. If not, then we just go as we were intending to do before. We just go for the loan and do it as a group. And if we can't do it as a group, then, as I said, my GI Bill, I can do so many units on the GI Bill, and we just have to sign contracts saying, okay, you're renters. Whatever nomenclature we got to do to get us on the land and doing what we need to do. Make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. So those are the things that, let's keep with this. We're running out of time here. So these, as long as we're meeting these objectives that we've been going over, eligible applicants should consider outreach as mutually beneficial to both the communities and the NRCS, such as partnerships that incorporate local needs and prioritize conservation investments. Such outreach should increase awareness of the NRCS programs, services, and career opportunities in agriculture and natural resources conservation within our community. So if we had children that were teenagers, then we could actually train them, and the NRCS would, what, pay for it? And they could say, we're training them, and they are considering considering what occupation, all of that is within play. Okay. And even for some of us that are young enough to still do it, I don't think there's too many of us that are. But again, or we could still do it if we're not, you know, getting Social Security and stuff like that. Just say, hey, I'm going to do this, and I'm just going to educate you. So, just opportunity. So the priority areas that NRCS will consider for this info are addressing local natural resource issues. So she's going to, she said they have a chart that identifies the natural resource issues in Arizona that the state considers to be an issue. We would want to incorporate that into what training. This is where we're doing it at. Okay. So outreach activities to support understanding of the NRCS planning process. So she's going to send me, she gave me a brochure that has these steps in it, but then like for the planning process itself, they got 9 steps that's just in that one. So we would list those 9 steps. And for us, you know, it ain't like you got to have this stuff memorized in your mind. You just got to be able to read it from a paper and tell people about it. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. So we would say, okay, this is the NRCS planning process. These are the steps for the planning process if you're going to apply for a grant or if you're going to apply for one of their programs. And so what it's doing is also making us aware and educated on their what, programs and services,
mm-hmm.
and how we apply for them, how we can get paid to do that. That's all I'm saying. So we learn about their programs, and then, like I said, they got it's all laid out, and she's going to help me to write it in such a way that the curriculum meets their requirements. And the only thing we do is then just put the information in. Okay, here's the NCRCS program implementation and the planning process in there, these steps. And this is what you got to do. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. And then the next one, promoting potential conservation career opportunities. Just really going out to the NRCS site and looking for the different jobs that they do and saying you can actually go in and be a land conservationist or whatever sort of occupational programs that are available to you as a young person, or if you're in the middle of your life, you know, you can do this. You got to really want to, you know, I think these types of jobs, like anything else, is something that you have to love. So if you love nature, or you love, you know, animals, or you got an interest in saving the planet, then those are typically the type of people that go into these types of jobs. If we are on the farm for sustainability, you know, we don't want to get out there and just treat the farm like it is just land that we can just do anything on. We just throw trash on it and all this kind of stuff. No, we don't want to do that either. So all of these programs, you know, they're going to help us. So if stuff and the worst event happens, if we already have these things in place and we already know what we're doing as far as, you know, survivability, then we will have everything we need in place and we will know what it's for. And we should be able to teach also what the next generation. So that's the whole purpose. So they're wanting to be, you know, recruiting students from underserved communities or who attend minority serving institutions. So that first part, anybody that's what, in an underserved community? So that school-to-prison pipeline that I was talking about? Or just going to the schools and saying, you know, for minority students, we want to present a seminar to them on going into farming or going into land conservation or resource conservation, those types of what, careers. All we got to do is say and show that we are doing, presenting the information. So that could be to schools, that could be to churches, that could be to different communities. Everybody understand that?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So, well, that's what they want, outreach to promote career opportunities, okay, to underserved communities, and then introduce the principles and benefits of natural resource conservation through education and build an understanding of careers in agriculture, natural resource conservation, and related employment that builds the future of sustainable farming by preparing a diverse and next generation of producers and conservationists. So, you know, if you are concerned about the planet, if you are concerned about water quality or air quality, wildlife, using up resources or just say plastic recycling, that kind of stuff, then those are the careers that they're looking for people to go into. And we're not training them in those careers. We're just saying this is what available to you. Not that we ourselves are in those careers. So that is another aspect of this, promoting the adoption of climate smart conservation. Outreach should assist historically underserved producers with understanding the support available through NCRS finance and technical assistance programs to help producers mitigate the impact of extreme weather events like flooding or after a natural disaster. So if you know that you live in a floodplain or you know that, like I know that on the land, I can see how the water drains. And if we wanted to divert that water so that it wasn't eroding the land and you know, divert it into ponds or whatever, then that is what this is for, climate smart, like that. If it's, you know, whatever type of event. And so she's supposed to identify specifically those things that are events here in Arizona. A lot of those, you know, we get monsoons and the monsoons can either be light or they can be heavy. And if you are not, like right before I came here to Arizona, when I first got my assignment here, I was in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, and they had a rain event here, and every place looked like a raging river. That's how much it rained here, and the water couldn't soak in because the ground was so hard. So the rain fell and had nowhere to go, and that was the problem. So let's say that happened, you get one of those rain events up north, the potential for that is already there. So you look at your land and say, okay, we need to put in, we need to plant grasses here because the grasses, different types of grasses have deep roots, and they will, the water will go over them and keep going, but it won't take the dirt with it. So we can say, okay, we need equipment to do this. We need the seed, we need the equipment, yada, yada, yada. And we would just train people who are in those environments, well, this is how you do that. Can't do much about tornadoes. Well, I don't think we get tornadoes where we're at up there. I've only seen in the valley in close to 30 years, 2 tornadoes that were ever reported in the valley. But if you were in Kansas or Idaho or Missouri, you know, Illinois, those places like that, Tornado Alley, Tennessee, Alabama, they're common. If you're down on the coast, Florida or, you know, South Carolina and things like that, then you got the risk of hurricanes. And then the effects of, you know, if the land floods or, you know, get salt inundated, how do you reclaim all that? So just training them for this area. Only thing I know is extreme heat. And then in the from July through September, October is the monsoon. It rains, you know, a lot here. And even when I went there this past September, every day it rained. And, you know, some of them were vicious thunderstorms. If we live out there, then we got to make sure that wherever we are, you know, putting houses or the dome, that it's not a flood zone. And if we happen to put it in a flood zone, then how do we divert that water so that it goes someplace else rather than where we're living? Can we use plants? Can we build ponds, overflow ponds, all that kind of stuff? So we would just be knowledgeable about that, but we could actually get paid to learn it for ourselves and then get paid to actually implement it on our own property by the USDA, specifically the NRCS. Okay, encourage conservation in small-scale urban agriculture. Outreach to promote partnerships that improve NRCS ability to connect with historically underserved producers and underserved communities on small acreage and increase their participation in NRCS conservation programs that meet the community need for sustainable food production. If you can, you know, again, this small acreage can even be backyard. So just teaching people how to do that because they already know there's going to be food shortages. And if you're not growing your own, you're going to be in trouble. What a lot of this is based upon. So we can be, you know, growing food for ourselves and make sure that it's sustainable, whether we're growing it outside or inside the tunnel. And then whatever is, you know, over what we need, we sell on the market, or we grow for ourselves and plus for the market, the local market. And depending upon what we grow, we could actually sell to the farmers market or to the big grocery stores. I don't really want to sell to the big grocery stores because my research says there's not a lot of money in that. Okay, they really try to get over on you, so they want to pay you less. But again, we can meet this and we can do this. Develop conservation leadership skills and opportunities. Outreach to inform historically underserved producers and underserved communities of leadership programs that will help develop community leaders able develop community leaders able to help NCRS with identifying local natural resource issues and community conservation priorities, as well as advance NCRS ability to incorporate underserved community priorities into its implementation of conservation programs. So if we say, hey, we got a problem on our land with this, and it's not something that they have identified yet, then they will implement, you know, procedures to address it. Or if it's already being addressed and we never had access to it, then we can apply through their system, you know, for the resources to help address that issue. Okay. Any questions on that? Because those first sections, just repeating themselves, just more detail in the bottom, what I just read. More specific.
No, not really.
Okay.
No, sir.
So that's what we need to work on. We'll take the program. We will develop a, you know, these are the programs. This the who, what, when, where, and how. I will get a listing from you know, the young lady and say, okay, can you give me contact? She said she could give me you know, the direct contacts for each of these programs. And anything that we're going to apply for, she's going to grease the wheel so that, you know, we are in the right nomenclature. We're going to be talking to the right person. She's going to have also talked to them for us for stuff that we're trying to do. Okay. And basically what she told me is once we get into the acceptance stage, then when it comes time to giving money, then basically it's almost a rubber stamp because, you know, they want to give the money away. So we just got to meet their objectives, and then, you know, it's almost like a rubber. Yeah. Yes. Then we just got to do what we say we're going to do. Okay, so we want to, I have the list of the programs. I was going to break it out into a spreadsheet. I'll send everybody a link to it, and I will probably take, I can't do it tonight or tomorrow. Well, tomorrow during the day I can. So everybody knows, tomorrow starting in the evening, we start observance of Passover in the evening. Then Thursday is a no work day, and we won't do anything even Thursday night. Friday would be Sabbath. Sunday is the first fruit. So the next time we could actually really do anything is next Monday. And then Wednesday would be a no-work day for the last day of Passover. Okay, that's a no-work day. We won't do anything on that. So Monday and Tuesday, and then next, you know, then the following Thursday, you know, we really need to be meeting whenever we can and get this knocked out. This curriculum is the most critical piece of this. And I don't see it being hard to create. And I think a lot of it I could probably do myself. But I don't want to do it all myself. We all got a vested interest in this. And so I would say, you know, you do these, you do these, you do these. Then you email it to me. I'll put it all together. I will, you know, do the writing for the course curriculum. I will create the syllabus. you know, what services we're going to offer. We would try to sit down together and determine what audience, what group we're going to go after. I've mentioned some. If you can think of others, then, you know, by all means, bring it up. Because we just want to be able to create a target audience. And then from my end, like I said, some of the camps, I'm going to go out to them and sort of introduce this to them and say, hey, this is what, you know, we're doing. We want to be able to offer this service and, you know, to your community. And you should be able to use these programs. And then as she teaches me the nomenclature, I will teach them the same nomenclature. You need to say it this way. You need to put it in this form so that they can also be what be as successful as they can be. So that is the so I can, you know, also take some pictures to say, hey, this is what we're doing, included in the package. Because, you know, again, everything is perception. Okay, it's perception. So we want to get approved. We want to meet their program requirement, and then we want to present it in such a way that either we have been doing it or we know how to do it. And then if we, you know, divide up the different curriculum requirements and say, okay, you're going to learn this aspect of it and that's what you're going to teach, then we need to do the things to create the jobs for ourselves. So even if it was, you know, administrative jobs and you're going to keep track of students, and you're going to be responsible for reaching out to organizations, and you're going to be responsible for whatever, we assign a duty and a job to each one of us, and then we include those salaries in the money that we're asking for, and it needs to be, you know, reasonable. So we have to find out and see, you know, what is allowed to be paid for any given position. We include those as salaries, and then when and if they contact you, then you just got to be able to talk the talk. And as it said, I think in another place, it doesn't really have to be real technical. If it's real technical, then I will take that on, okay? But if it's just telling somebody about the program, and you can have, you know, you can have flashcards or whatever, and we'll develop that for ourselves, because these are the highlights, these are the key points, and I don't know what questions they would ask you, but here's the information, and you just got to be able to, you know, just go over it and be kind of familiar with it, and then be able to talk to it. Does that make sense? Y'all willing to do it? I guess I better ask that.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. That's more assuring. Trust me. That's like good grief. Anyway, that's what we need to concentrate on. We need to have all this together. So I'm going to push this out to you guys. Like I said, the link for the program. And, you know, only thing I want you to do, whichever ones I tell you, I want you to just gather who, what, when, where, and how. And if they give a why. So that we can just sort of say, this is this program, this is what it addresses, this is who you need to contact, so forth and so on. And if we need to make it more in-depth, then our first draft, I'm going to meet with her again. And she's going to go over what we come up with, and then she's going to review it and make sure that it's worded to meet their needs, what the NCRS would be looking for, so that when we submit it, it's, you know, it is more apt to be accepted and to be funded. Now, again, with this, if we don't meet the first funding round, but our program that what we want to do is accept it, but it doesn't get funded this time, we don't have to resubmit. The next time that they fund, let's say that the next funding round comes in July, then they will fund it then. Okay, and we, you know, and they do send back, let's say that the package is incomplete or whatever, or they want to see something else, something more, then they will do that. They'll say, okay, you need to add this or do whatever. So they will do that, and, you know, we just comply with what they're asking for and get it back to them as soon as possible. And we are more apt than not to get funded, okay? I'm just trying to make sure that we get as large a chunk of money as we can. So, as I said, and be thinking in the mindset of if you were going to do a program and you were trying to include housing as a service or include it. Like I can say, okay, we need classrooms. Then we could probably get a dome funded for that. Where, you know, we're going to put chairs and a desk and that kind of stuff in it. And that's all that, but that's all it could be used for until the program is over. Then we could use the dome for whatever we wanted to use it for. Does that make sense?
Yes.
We can repurpose it for whatever we want it to do. But if we can, like I said, my thought process is with the glamping site saying, okay, because as part of the, if we incorporate it into the glamping site, let's say some of these conservation measures as part of the glamping site, then we could technically turn around and say, okay, we are using this site, even though we're going to have it built up this way, to demonstrate water retention. And we just have a feature like that on the land that we can show that that's what it's doing. Or if it's flood prevention and we planted a field with grass and wildflowers. And as long as we're going to use it to tell people, okay, this if you, you know, plant grass and wildflowers like this, then this will keep the land from soil erosion. They will pay for all that. And so we say with the glamping, the tents, then people are going to come and stay for a day or two or three, whatever the case is, and we're going to take them through this program. On day one, they go to these seminars. On day two, they go to these classes. On day three, they are in the field and they are, you know, berms are explained to them, and we use the natural lay of the land. The natural flow of the land, and this is why we build this berm to do this, to make the water flow this way, and we can retain the water here, and so that they get hands-on, and but they're also paying for the what? The dome, and then they're going to pay for them to stay there? That makes sense?
Yeah.
So we can use the domes in that way, and that's, you know, that's where my thought process is at with that. And then when we are, you know, and we can actually schedule how many we want to do of those a year. So any other time, we could actually have those same domes on what, Airbnb? And people can rent them. So we can say, hey, these are the days of the month that these domes are reserved for NRCS business as far as training and that kind of stuff. And then these are the days when they're not being used for it by NRCS. They are being used, they are being rented out on what, Airbnb. And it might be more lucrative to rent them to the government. So have your mind in that mindset. Because I had to change the way that I was thinking. And that's how we can get them to pay for it. Does that make sense to everybody?
Yes, it does.
Yes,
yeah,
Brother Mal.
Yeah, that is how we can get them to pay for it. We just have to create the program. And so we could actually if we did this right, we could say, okay, we're going to present three on that land. And if we only put up 6 tents or 7 tents, then we could use those conservation measures as part of the core, if that makes sense. You know, just part of the campground itself. And then say, okay, when people come here for from the NCR, you know, for that we are promoting this program to, then they stay in these, and these are the features that we are training them on and how to do this. And it costs, you know, we can put a price on what it's going to cost for them to stay there.
Right.
You know, for 3 days, the three-day package is this amount. Or if it's a four-day package or a week, whatever it is, we determine what that is and what that's going to cost. Include the cost of the training in it. So they're going to come for, let's say, 3 days, and this is what they're going to be trained on. This is how much lodging costs, food, and what have you. Then that's what we charge, you know, that's what we charge out of the program for. So taking that line, and then when it comes to the farm itself, because that could just be what, land conservation or water conservation with the glamping site. Didn't have to have anything to do with the farm. But we're going to be teaching agricultural concepts or using that so that we can say, okay, we want, you know, 6 tents or 9 tents or whatever it is, and this is how we're going to use them. And this is what we're going to, what people are going to get when they come to do this program. And so we're going to teach them, you know, stuff about the NCRS, their programs. We're going to expose them to that. We're going to expose them to resource conservation, whether it's land, water, air, or animal, you know, habitat. We're exposing them to all that, and they will get a bit of that. You know, each day with the relative information that goes along with it. And then we, you know, depending upon how we develop the program, then we say, okay, we got field trips or whatever. So we're going to go and see some of these natural features. And if your land looks like this or as long as, you know, because there's public land up there that, you know, we can go on and say, okay, this is how the land naturally looks. You can see where wind erosion is going on here. You can see where water erosion is going on here. You can see where soil erosion is going on here. You can see, you know, just all these different things. And then this is how you control that when they're in that area. And then we can say, okay, we need, you know, living quarters for this many people, and we're going to do it with these geodesic domes, and we're going to do it, you know, this way, and they will pay for that. We just got to make sure we include it in the program. So we got a lot to do, little time to do it, and then we create the jobs for that. So, you know, the domes and everything have to be maintained. So we create our own jobs, okay? And then say, okay, we got to have room up here for staff. I'm just thinking of different ways that we can justify asking them for the money and they pay for it, and it's justifiable. So if I say we got to have staff, and, you know, staff lives on site, and they help with the farm and they help do the training, and we need this many houses or this many domes, and this is also how they contribute to this right here, I think we can justify this and get it all done. And I think that I just, you know, with that, what I just told you, that is the avenue to get the glamping domes done and our own house. Because if we live on site, then we're going to need someplace to stay, right?
Right.
Okay. And this is, you know, these are the houses. No, we're not staying in no hut. We're staying in, you know, we got the modern, the modern conveniences. Yeah. So what you know, we project that the housing's going to cost. And they may not give us all of it, but if they give us some of it, that's still better than what?
No.
Right. Because it's going to be free money. We don't have to pay it back.
Right.
That's why we want to get as much of this as we can. And we need to think of the programs that way so that we can, you know, if we however we write it and we can justify them paying for it, being incorporated into the program. Like I said, they only have to be involved for 3 years. And if anything come down between now and 3 years, they ain't going to be interested in that anyway. Because it's going to be, you know, the focus is going to shift somewhere else. So we need to do what we need to do. And I think the next time that we get together, we're going to do the curriculum first. This is what we're offering. And then we're going to, second phase of that, real quick, we're going to do the program. We're going to have this many houses on the land. Staff is going to live on the property. They're also going to be involved with the land conservation and the farm. They're going to be, you know, involved in, we won't even call it a glamping site. We'll call it something else. The resource center, resource training center. And so we're going to use this for when we have people to train. They can come and stay at whatever time we want to stay, 3 days, 5 days, whatever. And this is the curriculum for that course. This is what they're going to be taught, and they're going to have hands-on with this. I think that it is very doable. We just need to get busy. So with that being said, are there any questions or comments? And we'll make a motion to adjourn this meeting. I know some of us is late, and but I'm excited. Because the program for the power, if we go ahead and include all of this in, you know, the housing, and I think I just figured out the way that we can do the housing, just the wording, all of the power and all that stuff will be taken care of with this other program. We can say, okay, we need this amount of power, and you know they got, I think it was like $8 billion to give away. So we want to get it, as much of it as to do what we need to do. All right, amen. So that's all I have. Tomorrow is Passover. We will start at 7 p.m. Central Standard Time. With our observance, and we will have our service tomorrow night, so make sure that you have your Passover meal. Make sure that you have, we won't be doing wine, so have your grape juice, your unleavened bread. Be prepared to read. I think I'm going to assign reading to all of you so that we all have a break off in this. I will give you the chapters that I'm going to have you to read out of what book. So we need to do the Exodus, but not all of Exodus. We want to do the part where, you know, the Most High brings them into the wilderness. The first Passover, we will do when they're exiting. That's the first Passover, and what the Most High tells them to do. Then we will bring it into the New Testament, and we will do the scriptures that concern Messiah and him being our Passover and what that is all about as part of our reading. So be prepared to read and participate. and I'll just tell you what, you know, what you'll be reading. Sign it to you, then we will, you know, do our observance, and we will pay homage to the Most High. We will worship, and we will celebrate, and we will, you know, worship Him, because the Passover is the Passover itself was a type of Christ, and we know that Christ means Elohim's power and wisdom unto salvation. That's what the title Christ means. And so, you know, people assign the word anointed to it, but the Most High showed me in the scriptures that this is the power and the wisdom of Elohim unto salvation, is Christ. In the wilderness, that was actually a real rock, a flint rock water came out of. And that's how He saved His people, and that was Christ in the wilderness with them. So we understand those terminologies, and we just celebrate the power of our Elohim and what He's going to do in the end to save us, you know, to redeem us and to reconstitute us into His people, into His nation. So we will be prepared to remember our Messiah, our King, on tomorrow and again on Sunday, which is the Feast of the First Fruit and the celebration of His resurrection from the dead. And then the seventh day is a solemn assembly, which will be next Wednesday. Will be a solemn assembly, I think that's the 12th. And so we will have a service then as well. Okay. And then after that, the next feast to come up is Pentecost. So with that being said, may the Most High bless you. You know what? Let me do this first. I make a motion that we adjourn this meeting. Do I have a second?
I second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? The ayes have it. May the Most High bless you. May He keep you safe from all hurt and harm, seen and unseen, until we meet again. And I didn't even tell you guys about the market. Real quick, inside the meeting, though. Let me pull this over. This market right here, I said one of my guys, one of the guys that comes and buys from me every Friday, I think I did tell you guys about this, but I didn't show you. They will just buy the microgreens off of me, and they'll sell them themselves. So I'll go up there, and I think I may go up there. No, I can't go Thursday. Sometime next week. Because of Passover and that kind of stuff. So I'll go next week. I'll talk to the owners. I will negotiate a price for different, you know, the different microgreens and the difference of them, whether it's, you know, 4 ounce, 8 ounce, a pound or whatever. And hopefully we can get them as a client where I'm taking $500 or $600 or $1,000 worth of greens up there. They pay for it. I walk away. They do the selling. Okay. And that would be a weekly thing, because I think they're selling out like that.
Brother Miles, you said you had something up. You put something up. I don't see nothing up.
I did. Let me reshare the screen again. Let me find y'all first. Where did that go? Where did our page go? Oh, there it is. On the same page. Different. Okay, hold on a second. This screen. Start screen sharing. Leave this one. Okay. Pull up your screen, and where did you pop off to? What happened to that screen? It was on the, oh, I know. I'm doing this wrong. Okay. You see it now. Could be a woman behind some vegetables.
With a blue hat on.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, so he said he goes up to this market once a week, and they're always selling everything out. They don't have any microgreens. He said they used to have microgreens, but the only one that they had that they were selling was wheatgrass, and now they can't even get that, okay? So he wants to go, and he's going to make the pitch for us before I ever even go. And he's been buying microgreens from me, and that I have way more of a variety than they ever had there, me and the owner, okay? And then what they do is they buy the produce from the farmers, and then they resell it, okay? So what I would do is grow the microgreens, harvest them, and then just deliver it to them, you know, for whatever price we negotiate, and then they sell them themselves. I'm not responsible for selling. They would resell. Okay, so I'm sure that he would probably do something tentative. So maybe he would buy $100 or $200 worth and then, you know, see how it goes. But, you know, the guy that comes and buys from me, he buys 4, 5, and 6 at a time. He said, you know, he's sure that it would always sell out because they always sell everything at market. They come and they just sell out. So if the microgreens are good, he didn't seem to think, and he didn't want anything out of it. So he just seems to think that they would go over well there. They used to have them. Now they don't. Okay. So I will go up there the first chance that I get, and he's going to set up a meeting. I've already told him, you know, set it for Thursday or Friday. It won't be available. Sometime next week. During the day, or it may have to be the week after, because I really want to work on this grant stuff first,
right?
And get it out the way. I mean, it's only an hour up the road, and if I, you know, got some free time to do that, then maybe I will go up there. But my priority is this grant and writing the stuff for that. So the farmers markets that I already got in play, I still need to grow and supply for them and the people that I have on subscription, grow for them. But then after Passover feast, then I would tell him, you know, hey, when is the next time it's market, as long as it's not on these days that I'm at market, or then that I will make a ride up there and we will go to that market and I will sit down with that owner and, you know, try to negotiate a price. And then from negotiating that price, then I will see what type of volume he's looking at. And then I'll know what I need to grow. And then hopefully it sells out and the demand is so great that if it's $1,000 worth, whatever it is, I want to try to, you know, make sure that I can meet those volumes and, you know, sell to them. And now, you know, if I can get up to that with that one customer, great. Because then I'm sure there's going to be other customers like that as well. Based upon, and the reason that we're getting this type of attention is because I'm not taking just anything to the market. And they are fresh, and everybody just, you know, this is the best we've ever had. And that's about whenever they've bought from anybody. So I don't know what other growers were doing, but all the ones that have bought from me, especially like this last Sunday, they were like, you know, they're all looking for subscriptions, especially because summer is coming and most of the market's closed, and they want to still, you know, they want to be able to get these microgreens. So it's a viable business within itself, but it's not going to be generating the money that we can get from this grant.
Right.
And so that is, you know, priority. I will still maintain what I'm doing with that. You know, I still go to the market and, you know, make sure that I'm growing. And then I'm going to have to, I'll probably talk to my son and say, okay, show me what your income is. If it ain't what it should be, this is what you're going to be doing. And so you're going to need to help out with that, period. I'm sure he's generating income from his business in some form, but I don't think it's in the levels that he needs to be, because he's spending way more time with his son than he should be. And I don't mean that in a negative way. But you know, you gotta be able to and everything else, and right now you're in my house. So either you are getting rich or you're not making enough to deal on your own. So that is where that's going to go, because I will more or less be forced to do it to make sure I can maintain both. And then, you know, he'll get paid out of that. He'll get paid out of it. All right, so I don't have anything else. So may the Most High bless you. May he keep you safe from all hurt and harm, seen and unseen, until we meet again. Remember, I love you. I really do. And not love you like the Most High loves you. Let's continue to fear Yah and keep his commandments. Amen. Have a blessed evening, everyone, and I'll see you guys on tomorrow.
All righty.
Okay.
Word, a person.
Shalom, Brother Miles. Shalom, family.
Shalom, family. Peace and blessings, everybody. Enjoy the rest of your evening.
Amen.
And see you guys tomorrow.